Cause number 1323-124-CV, Yomeida Perez Longoria individually and as next friend of Medina Longoria, NKL, a minor, and as representative of the estate of JSC, deceased, minor, Emmanuel Guerra and Robert Cardenas versus 7-Eleven.
May it please the court. Chief Justice Contreras, Justice Silva, and Justice Pena. This is an interlocutory appeal from a summary judgment in a dram shop case. There is one very straightforward legal issue and a myriad of fact issues. The legal issue is one of statutory construction. Does provide only mean sale? Fortunately, the legislature has told us no. Unfortunately, the trial court said yes. We're here because the trial court answered that question, does provide mean sale, incorrectly. We posit. She said that yes, that proximate cause does not exist as a matter of law if the alcohol was sold to someone other than the person who caused the injuries. 7-Eleven encouraged the court to adopt that position, and that's their position here. The problem with 7-Eleven's position is that it ignores the actual language of the statute, it misinterprets the case law that is very fact-intensive, and it undermines completely the policy of the Dram Shop Act. The slippery slope that defendants talk about is not present here, and we'll address that in the argument, but just so that the court knows, this is a relatively, I would say, simple legal analysis. The legal analysis is directly from the language of the Dram Shop. Dram Shop Act says, providing, selling, or serving an alcoholic beverage may be made the basis of a statutory claim under this chapter upon proof that at the time of the provision, it was apparent to the provider that the individual being provided with an alcoholic beverage was obviously intoxicated to the extent that he presented a clear danger to himself and others. 7-Eleven would like this court to completely ignore the word provide, and instead, they want the court to focus on the other two verbs the statute uses, sell and serve. The problem with this analysis is that it violates the express intent of the statute because it ignores the express language of the statute. The statute gives us only two definitions, and for this particular portion of the analysis, and those definitions are provision or provider and provision.
And the statute does say provision includes, but is not limited to, sale or service. So let me ask you two questions. First, Appley has pointed out in their brief that their, and I, of course this will be a follow-up question for them, that their license, where did I put this? Put that in my notes. No, that their 7-Eleven's license allowed it only to sell, not serve alcohol at the store. Is that of any significance in the fact that there was no violation associated with this incident?
That's of no significance, Your Honor. The people of Texas, a jury, is entitled to determine whether or not 7-Eleven is liable for the actions that it took in a court of law. The administrative action is not relevant to this analysis. But more importantly, the court just said something that's the key here, and that is, provision includes sale and serve. They are licensed to sale, yes. To sell, yes. But 7-Eleven, just like a restaurant, provides alcohol too. They don't simply sell alcohol.
Now, in this instance, because it was a group of people that came in, and I can, you know, see how that would be very difficult circumstances. So anytime you have a group of people coming in, especially at the island where there's a lot of partying going on and a lot of intoxication, how it would put a provider like 7-Eleven in a difficult position. Is the distinction in this case that the fact that Miranda carried the pack of beer, 18-pack of beer, I believe it was, carried it to the counter. Is that something that should have made it obvious to the clerk that it was intended for her?
Yes, Your Honor. That's a fact issue, though. The fact issue is that whether the clerk provided Miranda with alcohol is a fact issue for the jury. However, the legal issue, the statutory construction issue here is, does provide have any meaning separate and apart from sell? And of course it does. The legislature tells you it has more meaning than to sell or to serve, because it means more than. The definition of provision in Merriam-Webster's is supply.
So then you're saying that for our purposes under this permissive appeal, we're simply looking at what the court actually said. It said it had to be a sale, and we can say, no, that's not what the statute says, regardless of the facts, because we're not here to determine liability, obviously, under what the facts are. That would be for a jury if we were to say, as you've argued.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor.
I don't know if that was clear, but
it was clear enough. The issue here is one that needs to go to a jury. So, if you look at the language of the statute, you are essentially looking at the language of the charge, and this is a great opportunity to talk about the slippery slope argument. The language of the charge is required to follow as closely as possible to the language of the statute. All right, well, here, did 7-Eleven provide Miranda with alcohol? The instruction that would follow that for the jury is provision means includes but is more than sale and the sale and service of alcohol. That's the instruction to the jury. That's how we hew close to the statute and make sure that the jury has the information that it needs. However, this is a proportionate responsibility case, just like Duenez was. 7-Eleven is not going to be the only person on the charge. There are going to be multiple other parties on the charge, whether they're there by third-party practice or because Miranda belongs on the charge. This case will not be one where if this court finds that 7-Eleven or that the term provide includes the term sale and serve but is not limited to, that doesn't mean the floodgates are open and 7-Eleven is now responsible for everybody who walks in their store. To Chief Justice's question, their responsibility is to be accountable, to be aware of what a reasonable clerk would be aware of in that circumstance. And in this instance, yes, they provided Miranda the beer because she walked up to the counter. She picked it out herself, walked up to the counter, put it on the counter. If you look at page 764 of the clerk's volume one, there's a whole series of pictures showing Miranda approaching the clerk's desk with the beer, placing the beer on the counter in front of her, moving along with the beer when it's her turn to present it, and when the clerk asks her for her ID because he reasonably believes she's going to purchase it, she gestures to her boyfriend who has the money. 7-Eleven can't escape liability because Miranda didn't pay for this out of her very own funds. 7-Eleven is responsible because they provided that alcohol to Miranda, and as the recipient, she subsequently caused harm. That's the relationship we're talking about, not this group versus individual liability binary. No one is talking about that except 7-Eleven. The issue here is whether 7-Eleven provided alcohol to Miranda.
And let me ask y'all, although we're not deciding the fact issues, I understand that, that's clear. If she were just a member of the group, but hadn't done any of the things, she's just there with this group that's come in, would you be here? Would the argument be the same?
I think it would be a closer fact issue there. But I think that the instruction to the jury and the dram shop itself recognizes that provision is more than just the guy who shells out his money. So provision is going to be somewhere in that continuum, right? Is it where she's standing by looking at donuts and does nothing, has no interaction whatsoever, to all the way where we have her here?
So then the question for the jury would be, did they provide to her under these circumstances? And
yes,
it's going to be a case-by-case scenario.
Yes, it is. And the cases show that, Your Honor. I mean, the cases that both parties rely on stand for that proposition. Boyd, Lewis, those are all situations where the court is looking at the engagement of the driver, who is the person who caused the accident, with the provider. And in Lewis and in Boyd, you don't have that interaction. In Cavillo, you don't have that interaction because the mom is drinking the drinks that are being provided to the daughter by people from the bar. I mean, there's that. It's so attenuated. There's no way that the court's going to find that they provided that alcohol to the mom. Here, as Chief Justice Contreras pointed out, this is a continuum. And on this side of the continuum, where we are right here, she provided every indication that she intended to consume or receive this alcohol. But that's not for this court to determine. This court simply determines whether provide means more than sale or service. And of course it does, because the legislature told us it does. Finally, as to the slippery slope argument, I want to return to that simply because there are numerous backstops here that will prevent runaway juries. The dram shop has a safe harbor provision. We haven't even reached that yet. The dram that we have under Duin is the dram shop is controlled by proportionate liability. We haven't even reached that yet. We are simply at the stage of determining whether a jury can hear the question of whether 7-Eleven provided beer to Miranda. And the question is very limited. It is between 7-Eleven and its representative and Miranda. We agree that the individual who was provided the alcohol must be the same recipient who causes the harm. There is no argument there. The question is, was she provided? 7-Eleven not only conflates purchase with provide, they also ignore or and use a connector word and instead. It is not required that the person who provides and purchases be the recipient who causes the accident. That's a misstatement of Boyd. That's a misstatement of the law. It's or. It's disjunctive. It is a disjunctive phrase, provide, serve, or sell. In a broadly interpreted statute for the benefit of the public, to protect the public from drunk people. We would posit, Your Honor, that this reading, the proximate cause, does not exist if the alcohol was sold. That doesn't protect us. That protects 7-Eleven, but it doesn't protect the driving or walking Texas public. That was the purpose of the Dram Shop Act. Normally, I would argue it's broadly read, it's intended to be broadly construed, but here there is very express language directly on point. And that very express language is, we're not limited to sale and we're not limited to service. Provide means a licensee can be responsible for the later harmful activities of the recipient.
Thank
if there
you,
are
Sandy.
Any questions, we'll pass for the moment. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Good morning, and may it please the court.
Good morning.
Remember Star Trek? To boldly go where no one has gone before. Well, what the appellants are asking this court to do today is to boldly go where no court has gone before. and the court should decline that invitation. In
cases of first impression all the time. So.
In nearly 40 years of case law, there isn't a single case finding a defendant potentially liable without directly giving the alcohol to the intoxicated individual who causes the accident. Not one. Whether the theory is selling, serving, or providing. Conversely, every case that's out there over 40 years where a defendant has given the alcohol to someone other than the individual who eventually causes the accident, summary judgment. Appellants are asking essentially for an unprecedented expansion of the scope of dram shop liability here, unsupported by a single case over 40 years. The trial court followed the case law. This court should do the same.
In the Perseus case, though, wasn't real clear. Wasn't there a little bit of everything to where the intoxicated individual didn't necessarily purchase all the alcohol himself?
Well, that case fits the fact pattern I just described. So the plaintiffs had extensive briefing that this supported their case. And what they said in their brief is that, well, this supports our theory because the bar never directly gave any alcohol to the intoxicated individual. But as I pointed out in 7-Eleven's brief, if you read the facts of that case, they did. They did. They directly sold at least one drink to the intoxicated individual. He sidled up to the bar with his buddy and was served drinks directly by the bartender. So I don't know if they didn't read the case the same way I did. The court can read it. But that case clearly supports this fact pattern that I said. It doesn't support their argument. That case supports our argument. There was direct giving in that case. It fits the fact pattern. And I have yet to see, and I spent a lot of time, as you might imagine, looking at all the dram shop cases over 40 years, I've yet to see one that extends liability as far as
so,
they're trying to take it here.
Let's take a bar situation,
sure.
I think, which is bars are a little easier than convenience stores. Group of people, they're all drinking, and they continue to serve a person that is clearly intoxicated, but that person doesn't pay the bill. Somebody else at the table pays the bill. This guy, intoxicated, goes out and hurts somebody. You're saying there would be no liability in those
there, I think there is liability there. That's
okay.
Providing.
Correct.
And appellants are trying to make some argument that we're saying providing is the same as sale. Of course it's not. The statute says, and the legislature didn't help us out much here, did they? The statute says providing is sale and service, but it's not limited to that. So it's like sale and service plus. What does that mean? That's what we're here about.
Right.
And that is the issue here. And what I'm trying
but
to-
But the trial court has clearly said here that it's was sold, as a matter of law question. Oh yeah, she found as a matter of law, it does not exist if the alcohol was sold to someone other than the person.
Okay, very, very important point here on that. On pages 11 and 12 of 7-Eleven's brief, I started out with this right at the get-go. There's this Texas Supreme Court case that came out recently. I think it's called Elephant Insurance. And that talks about what this court's job is on an interlocutory review of a permissive review, I should
permissive
say, permissive appeal of a trial court order. And you're not just, you're not allowed to just focus on the actual statement or the order by the trial court, but rather whether the order in itself was correct. So what this court has to determine here is, was the summary judgment correct? Not necessarily the exact argument that the trial court used, but take a look at the case.
So when we review summary judgments as a matter of course, and the trial court specifically specifies, or not specifically, the trial court specifies its basis for the summary judgment, that's what we review. Why is that different? I have not read this Elephant Insurance case.
Yes, yeah, so yeah. Could you give us a cite on that if you should
have? Absolutely. Pull out my brief here. This is on, again, pages 11 and 12 of 7-Eleven's brief, and that case is Elephant Insurance versus Kenyon, 644 Southwest 3rd, 137. I think it hits that issue right on the head.
Okay, we'll take a look at that. Take your word for it for now.
Okay. I'm sure you're going to check my work on that.
I'm sure. Okay. We will.
So Let me talk a little bit about the case law again, because I think that's what we have to look at when we have a statute that is of no help from the legislature, frankly. We know providing is something more than sales and service. Okay, what does it mean? Let's look at the case law. So I want to focus on provision cases because that's what we're talking about here. So there are two cases where provision was at issue, and it exactly fits this pattern that I'm talking about. Pena versus Neal, 1995 Court of Appeals case from San Antonio. That's the one where a convenience store clerk didn't sell to an intoxicated driver, but rather bought the alcohol for her. Okay, so there wasn't a sale, there wasn't a service, it's a convenience store. This is a providing case. And the court allowed liability to go forward. And the connection to what I'm arguing here is that we have direct giving of the alcohol from the store to the intoxicated person that we don't have here. Another example from the case law and provision, Smith versus East. This is discussed in 7-Eleven's brief as well. 2013 Texas Court of Appeals Austin case, petition denied. That case involved a minor who essentially committed suicide by drinking herself to death. And the evidence in that case was not that the liquor store defendant sold her alcohol, she's a minor, or served her alcohol, but rather provided her alcohol, gave it to her. So these cases give us an idea, when we say provision means sale or service plus, what the outer bounds are. And they don't go beyond, they don't go to the extent of this case. Now let me conversely talk about the cases
that's how case law evolves. I mean, circumstances right? Well, change, and maybe it should. And
right?
maybe it's something maybe, that a jury should consider.
Maybe it should, but let's look at the other side of the coin. So we do have cases out there under the Dram Shop where it's this fact pattern, where the plaintiff tries to establish liability from the defendant providing the alcohol, selling, serving the alcohol to someone else, but it's not the intoxicated driver. Every one of those cases resulted in a summary judgment, just like this one. And the one I want to specifically talk about, because it's the one that actually discusses this theory, is Calvillo versus Frazier. It's a Dallas 2015 case.
What's the first name?
Calvillo.
Calvillo.
C-A-L-V-I-L-L-O. So the court explicitly rejected their theory here. So this is the case where mom and daughter go to the club to have some drinks, right? Group of guys thinks the daughter looks pretty good and starts buying her drinks. And the server is aware of this, right? That the guys are buying drinks for the daughter. Well, mom starts drinking off of daughter's drinks. So the bar never sold mom any drinks, never provided her any alcohol directly, right? And mom goes out and causes a wreck. She gets drunk and causes a wreck. So the Court of Appeals there said summary judgment is appropriate, okay? And what they said here, and I'm loosely quoting, we reject plaintiff's argument that mom was provided, sold, or served alcohol merely because the alcohol served in the club ultimately came from the club. Because no evidence exists to show mom was served alcohol by the club, no cause of action is available. That is exactly the fact pattern that I'm talking about here. There are other cases cited on pages 23 through 26 of 7-Eleven's brief that have this same fact pattern. Plaintiffs tries to establish liability when it's not directly given by the defendant to the intoxicated person.
Let me ask you a hypothetical.
Sure,
in that scenario, what if the bar, I mean, perhaps in that case they had zero knowledge that mom was drinking off
right.
of her daughter's
right.
drinks that were being purchased by someone else. What if they did? What if they saw this, that this was going on, a regular thing, they're selling drinks to this group over here that's having them delivered? I mean, they probably told the waiter, we're paying for those drinks. Keep giving them drinks. So
I think that's provision. I agree with you.
And that would
that
be different.
Would be provision, but that wasn't the facts of that case. If that had been the case, you can be sure that it would have been in the opinion. So that would have been their argument. Mm-hmm. So that clearly was not the evidence there. So again, I mean, I don't want to belabor the case law. It's all in the brief. But I think it supports this idea of direct giving as the outer bound of provision. Now, I heard a lot of argument about fact issues being here. And of course, that's the usual attack on summary judgment on appeal, right? There aren't any fact issues here on the material facts that are before the court right now. And we know this from the video. We have a video of everything that happened, and there's no dispute between.
Well, isn't the fact issue whether 7-Eleven provided the alcohol to Miranda under these circumstances?
No, because there's nothing for the jury to do here. There's no credibility of witnesses for the jury to weigh because we have the video, right? Mr. Padilla, who was the one who purchased the alcohol, I was too drunk, I don't remember anything. Mr. Izaguirre, who was the 7-Eleven clerk, he was deposed, no testimony about what was said in that exchange. Of course, he served about 40, 50 different customers within the course of that video, so no testimony there. So all we have and all we're ever gonna have factually is this video.
And the fact that she carried the beer up there, he cards her, so he believes she's going to purchase this, and then she says, card him.
We don't know that.
The jury can't infer that from the video?
Well, no, because that's inviting the jury to engage in speculation. I guess the point I'm trying to make is that these facts aren't going to change if you send it down to the trial court. This is all the evidence and all the record on this issue we're ever going to have. So you send it down to the jury. Ask them the question. Let's say they say yes, provision, okay? Guess where we're gonna be a year later? We're gonna be back up here with the same record, arguing that there was no legally sufficient evidence of provision. So it's
then it would be whether it was reasonable for the jury to infer that based on the evidence.
It might be a little different bit of standard of review, but we have the facts, I guess is my point. They're in front of you right now, and it's your job now to define the scope of provision. Does provision go this far under this set of uncontested facts? So it's kind of a red herring that we need to send it to the jury. There's nothing for them to decide. It's the video and it's nothing else. And we don't have audio on the video. So what we have is what we have. It's another point I wanted to make there. And again, I do agree with appellants that the issue here is the very narrow issue, and really the only issue in the case, is a legal one of statutory construction, this issue of provision, right? How far does it go? Mm-hmm. Everyone agrees 7-Eleven, quote unquote, sold the beer to Mr. Padilla. Everyone agrees that 7-Eleven didn't serve the beer to Miranda. They don't have a license to serve, right? They're a retailer. All agree that Miranda's intoxicated driving was the cause of the accident. No disagreement there. So we're really down to just this one issue. Again, the legislative definition doesn't help us much. Let me talk about a couple more concepts that I think lend themselves to a narrow, I guess the appellants are arguing for a broader construction of provision. We're arguing for a more narrow construction based on the case law that I've talked about. So a couple other things I think support a narrow construction of that statute. First of all, compare the provisions regarding provision to adults to minors. Now, obviously the legislator wanted to provide more potential liability for someone who provides to a minor than an adult, right? Because minors can't handle alcohol as well, et cetera, et cetera. So the legislature said, and it's the part of the statute right below the adult provisions, the legislature said, not only are you liable for directly giving alcohol to a minor, you are also liable for indirectly giving alcohol to the minor, unlike with an adult. And that's section 2.02 C2B, and that
which
provides
feeds into their straw person argument that they made in the appellant's brief, doesn't it?
Isn't
that,
pardon me?
Isn't that kind of lends it to the straw person argument that the appellants have made in the brief? Go ahead with your argument.
Okay, sure. I'm sorry. I don't mean to disregard your question.
No, no, no.
I just don't understand it.
Maybe I'm misunderstanding. Go ahead.
Anyway, what the statute regarding minors says is that an adult can be liable where the adult knowingly allowed the minor to be served or provided alcohol on the adult's premises. So merely allowing it to happen on your premises, indirect giving, can render you liable for a minor, not for an adult. So that we know the legislature knew how to write a statute that would have provided for indirect giving to an adult. They didn't. They did for minors. I think that's an important point.
Okay, I understand
that
what
informs you're
saying.
The construction.
Got it.
Also, the Dram Shop Act is to be construed narrowly according to the Texas Supreme Court. Remember, we had El Chico Court versus Poole. That's the common law dram shop liability. Well, the legislature comes over the top of that immediately with the Dram Shop Act. And there's a case that I discuss in 7-Eleven's brief, FFP Partners versus Duenas. The court's already mentioned it. So that case completely stands for the proposition that dram shop liability is to be construed narrowly. The dram shop limited the El Chico common law cause of action, and that's the way we construct it. So the plaintiffs in that case made the same Section 103 argument that appellants make here. Well, this is a statute to protect Texans, so you can't give proportionate responsibility to these people who are serving alcohol. And the Supreme Court said, no, 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 they're putting too much on Section 1.03 than that statute can bear. That is a general sort of aspirational section that we find at the beginning of many different types of legislation. And it doesn't serve to limit the language that the legislature used in Section 2.02. So falling back on some sort of broad construction doesn't, I think, carry the day for the appellants here. In fact, one court of appeals, the Fort Worth Court of Appeals in Steak and Ale versus Borneman in 2001, actually said that the plaintiff's burden under the Dram Shop Act approaches the heightened standard for gross negligence. It's so high. So we do have commentary from the Court of Appeals about what the scope of this statute is. In the couple minutes I have left, one more point. The implications of reversing the summary judgment are pretty significant, I would have to say, and going beyond, again, where any case has ever gone in terms of the scope of liability, because I think one of your hypotheticals talked about this, and I pointed this out in the brief too. What if it's a big group? What if it's HEB and it's a spring break party bus that pulls into the store, and they have security cameras everywhere, right? And these 15 drunk college students get out and they go willy-nilly in the store. A couple of them buy beer, you know, that no one has eyes on all these people. And then later, one of them takes the wheel, drunk driving, hurts someone, kills someone. If this case is reversed, if you expand the scope of liability to make the retailer responsible for sort of everyone's later conduct in the group, you are taking away the intent of the statute, which is to focus on the conduct of the defendant, and making them strictly liable for the later conduct of a bunch of people that are completely out of their control. And I discuss a case called Sheffield versus Drake out of the Eastland Court of Appeals, and that's where an employee buys some beer and leaves the IGA store where he bought it. And then he goes and gives it to his wife, who then gives it to the employee's brother, who then causes an accident. And the court said, no, 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 you can't hold IGA responsible for that because you're essentially imposing strict liability on the retailer. That's too far for the limited liability that the Dram Shop Act creates.
That's very different from a situation where they have eyes on the person.
It is different.
So that's,
but,
that's the question.
But I mean, again, it's not an issue at this point for the jury to decide because we have all the facts. It's really just an issue of statutory construction for this court. How far does it go? I've got 15 seconds left. Unless the court has any more questions, I'll sit down.
Do you have any questions?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
If I may, thank you for the opportunity for the rebuttal. I'll start with this point. I think the legislature did a great job when they wrote the statute, both in 1987 and in 2005. They knew what they were writing. They didn't change provide. They didn't change the definitions. They kept them in place. And the reason they kept them in place is because the legislature's job is to address all of the possible facts that might come up in the situation. So they use language that can address all these possible facts. It's the court's job to come back later and apply that language to the individual facts before them. It's not the legislature's job to say, well, what we mean is directly give. If you give them a beer, then you're liable. No, that is not what the statute says. The statute says provide. And the order that was appealed by agreement by both parties, the specific language that was appealed is whether proximate cause exists if the alcohol was sold to someone other than the person who caused the injuries. You don't need a broad construction. You can go straight to the language that the legislature, the 1987 legislature and 2005 legislatures wrote, and get your answer right there. We don't need to go broad. Does provide mean only sale and service? Nope. Legislature told us it doesn't. It means more. And as lawyers, every one of us knows how to read a definition that says includes but is not limited to. That's basic statutory construction. They gave us the statutory construction tools in order to understand the statute. So it's clear what the legislature intended to do with the dram shop, and that is speak broadly for all the various facts that could come before it.
Are you familiar with the elephant insurance case that was just cited by counsel?
Your Honor, I looked at it when I read it. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but yes, I looked at it when I read it. And the difference between that case and the case here is here we have a very specific issue. There are a number of summary judgments that 7-Eleven filed. I think five. And we responded to all of them. But the single issue that we took up was the issue of whether provide means sale. So the idea of, you know, you can handle any issue that you think that the order can be, you can sustain on any possible claim or any possible defense. No, that's not the case here. We asked you a specific question. The trial court asked a specific question, and we need help with this specific question. Correct. So that we can determine whether there's going to be a jury trial on this. And there should be a jury trial on this. The language of the statute gives us the charge. The definitions in the statute give us the instructions. It's for the jury to determine whether the engagement was sufficient enough between the clerk and Miranda to hold 7-Eleven responsible for providing Miranda alcohol. That's what we're here for. That's the sole issue. We all agree what the issue is, and we all agree that the focus is what the provider, the 7-Eleven clerk, did with regard to Miranda. Did he provide her that alcohol because she caused harm afterward? And the recipient and the individual are the same.
Okay.
There
thank
are any
you.
Other questions?
No, thank you. Good argument. Great briefs on both sides. We appreciate it. And the case will be under submission.